This is not to get confused. This one's for you. Baby, you my everything. You all I ever wanted. We could do it real big. Bigger than you ever done it.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Pack-A-Day Radio Show, live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook. Reminder, we've got the Mason Crosby Show with Mitch and Ellis coming up next from 9 to 11. It's going to be a huge victory Monday on the show as well, so make sure to check that out. And we've got comedian Sebastian Maniscalco, It Ain't Right Tour, coming to Fizer Forum on November 6th. Your chance to win tickets today by going to thefanmilwaukee.com. And now, without further ado, we are joined by Dusty Evely of Acme Packing Company in the Pack-A-Day podcast. You can find him on Twitter at Dusty Evely. Dusty, welcome in, my friend.
What's going on, man? Good to talk to you.
It is unbelievable to talk to you as well. It is always a joy. It is always a pleasure, especially on a Victory Monday, especially. And if you think this is any accident, by the way, that we are having you in on Halloween week, you would be mistaken, because I know that you are the king of horror and you are the king of Halloween. So we, of course, are going to talk a little bit about that as well. But thankfully, we do not have to talk about the horror of a Packers loss. We get a Victory Monday. I'm going to start, Dusty, by just asking you the simple question. What were your key takeaways from this Packers win over Jacksonville?
Man, this team knows how to win ugly. I mean, that's the big thing. We obviously, you know, Love had that kind of injury early that I think hampered what they wanted to do. But even before then, they didn't really seem like they were kind of settling in like I kind of thought. The defense was not on their A game. I think Halfley switched some stuff up from what he'd been doing the past couple of weeks, which I thought was kind of interesting. I'm curious the thought process there. So they gave up some more yards, bigger plays, more consistency from the Jacksonville offense, especially in the second half than we had seen before. And then also we just, the offense just was not clicking. We had some nice drives. That we had that one that ended with the interception in the red zone, and then just some missed throws and stuff. So, but even then, I know it's Jacksonville, and they're not the best team in the world, but Jacksonville has been its own little house of horrors, and Florida in general has been. So even when they weren't on their A game, even with Jordan Love leaving the third quarter, they still found ways to win. So that was still some good heads up play. We had that big play to Reed that sounds like was the result of some in game coaching, in game finding a tendency and picking at that a little bit. And then also, you know, even Chris Brooks, right? Like RB3 going down with a heady play late in the game. So it was still a well coached team. They did what they needed to, but just an ugly game, but they still found a way to win it, which is nice, although you can't do that every week.
No, you cannot. And the in and outs of every single play and just like the minutiae of it, like trying to get those final conversions, the third downs, the red zones, we'll maybe talk about that in a moment. We're not there, but this team does continue to make big plays, as you were kind of mentioning, the Jaden Reed play, the Tucker Kraft play down the field, a couple of big plays to Romeo Doubs, the forced fumble by Edgerrin Cooper, the pick by Xavier McKinney. Like, if it's not for the big plays in this game, they just lose easily because they couldn't consistently sustain anything on offense or defense, but it's those huge plays that really allowed them to get this win, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you mentioned like the big plays, on offense, I don't know if they still are. I don't see after this week, but they were like the most explosive offense in the league, even if the consistency isn't there, which makes sense with how Love in this offense kind of has been operating so far this year. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned Ed Cooper. That Cooper's been incredible. Seeing him get more time on the field has been amazing. And it's one of those I keep saying, you can't count on that stuff every week, right? Like you can't count on the turnovers. You can't count on those big plays every week. They keep doing it every week. I mean, they won the previous week with having turnovers, but you know, McKinney, these things are not accidents either. Like Cooper makes a great play, the McKinney interception, that's a great read by him. That's not where he's supposed to be. That's not where the quarterback thinks he's supposed to be, and he just drives on it and picks that ball off. So you can't count on interceptions eventually as stuff regresses, but they're doing their best to make their own luck on both sides of the ball, that even when they're not good, they're hitting. Yeah, that's a 51-yard throw at the end of the game, and that's something they kind of put in and figured out basically one quarter earlier. So it's hard to say they'll keep living this way. It's modern football. That's not typically the way you see modern football played, but they keep doing it, and their style suggests like there's something to this. They'll be able to keep doing it, if not maybe at this level every single game.
Hey, you're listening to Dusty Evely, writer at Acme Packing Company, here on 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, The Fan. I know you're the king of film breakdowns. I know you had the opportunity to go through some of the film already. I want to talk to you about three separate plays in this one. I want to start with the Love interception. What did you see on this pick, and what maybe was the reason why this play ended up in an interception?
Yeah, I'm unclear. That's not a read he usually makes. I mean, I think maybe he didn't think the guy was going to be there is all I can take from that. There was a kind of a vertical push. It's like a kind of a deeper kind of smash high-low concept where you've got this kind of deep out from Dobbs, and I think it's Watson running the corner, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
I think that Love believes the vertical, the initial vertical push from Dobbs is going to push that guy back. I think he's in some, they're in like a kind of a quarters look or something, and he doesn't think he's going to be there. The guy does flip his hips slightly. I think Dobbs kind of fades back on that route a little bit. And usually you see Dobbs kind of round that back to the ball. So I think it's a couple different things. I think a guy was there that Love thought was going to bail. He didn't bail. And then I think Dobbs drifts just enough to let that guy undercut it. So it's, I mean, I was going to say it's something we don't normally see from Love. And I think that's true. Like on that kind of route, he typically throws that and reads that well. So it's kind of a, like most of the year, it was kind of a weird read from him. And I think Dobbs could have helped him out a little bit, but that's still a ball. It's a timing route. And so I think once he sees that the hips flipped, he's like, all right, I'm letting this go. I don't think he put enough on the ball either. I don't think it matters with the way that guy undercut it, but I don't know. I think the placement seemed fine. I just think he didn't expect that guy to be where he was when he was there.
Yeah, I think him not getting enough on the ball, I don't know if that had to do with the injury. Obviously, he was already starting to deal with that. And then I thought the defender, too, like sometimes you have to tip your cap. I thought he did a great job of driving on that ball. Mm-hmm. Again, probably not the right read, probably not the right throw or the right decision, but the defender did make a phenomenal job jumping that pass. I want to go to two plays from a positive standpoint. First, the red zone play to Tucker Kraft. I joked earlier, you or I, Dusty, could have made that throw to Tucker Kraft for the touchdown. Not many things we probably could do on the football field. I think that's one of them. But overall, that's a beautifully drawn up play.
Yeah, it really is, and I've kind of gone back and forth on it. That it looks to me the way the offensive line is blocking, that looks like an RPO to me, because they're not usually like, you know, the difference between RPO and play action. You know this, Andy, is you get RPO, that's a run first, so those guys are pushing forward on the run, whereas play action is you sell that initial run and then you kind of sit back into pass pro. None of those guys are sitting back into pass pro, so it looks like an RPO to me, the way they're blocking. I've never seen them run it that way. And he kind of bubbles out from an inside position because you kind of get a guy crashing from the outside. Beautiful design, man. That was one I was watching that play. I rewound that thing probably five times, and I just kept going, oh, man, that's pretty. And yep. I don't know that I've ever seen them do that. It's just it's a very, very nice design off kind of just a core run from them down there.
I loved it because, I love that it comes from the inside tight end, not the outside tight end, because I feel like the outside tight end is maybe going to get a little bit more vision on him. When you see the outside tight end, you know, crash down, and then it's interesting that the inside tight end, Kraft in this case, comes out and he blocks the end on the outside, and then it almost is to the point where like it feels like the end kind of like chucks him into the backfield a little bit more to kind of like disengage from him. Yeah. And then he's just like, so all the defensive backs and everything are just looking run, run, run. There's nobody that's coming out. It looks like the defensive end is the one who creates the separation for Kraft. And then Willis just keeps it and Kraft is sitting wide open right there for the throw. That was just a beautifully, beautifully drawn up play.
Oh, and then, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, the other one that I wanted to talk about was obviously the Jaden Reed play. The one, like, as you mentioned, they kind of put in through the course of the week. Another beautiful play. We've seen them have this sort of concept before, but what did you see on this play?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it sounds like they, you know, it's off of their core kind of play action boot keep series stuff. And they had the exact same look. I wrote about this over at AccuPacking Company this morning, actually. It's up right now. Where exactly a quarter earlier, it's very bizarre, they're in the play action boot play. 1 minute, 13 seconds left in the third quarter, and then they snapped the ball here with 1 minute, 13 seconds left in the fourth. So separated by exactly one quarter. I mean, they just, when the Jaguars were in single high, which they were on that play action boot in the third, they're dropping the left side. They run that intermediate crosser from left to right. The boundary defender kind of carries that over, and then the safety kind of he drifts with the flood stuff over to the right, so the entire left is open. And it sounds like during the game, it doesn't sound like they put this in for the game, but they've got that, obviously that's the play they've got in their bag. And I think it sounded like Vrabel went over to the floor and was like, hey man, we got this. So when you've got the they were in too high in the fourth quarter, which makes sense because they're trying to not give up the big play, but they rotate down that single high strong side. So it's basically the exact same defensive look against the exact same offensive formation that one quarter later. Willis cans it. We got single high. We're running leak. everything looks exactly the same. I mean, the release from Reed looks exactly like the release he had exactly one quarter earlier, and then he just leaps out that left side, and Willis makes a great throw. I mean, he's wide open, but he still has to put that on him. He's got the safety over the top. He's got a trailing linebacker. I think it's a linebacker on him. So he's still got to put that in a decent spot. Puts it right on him, 51-yard gain, and they win four plays later. So, I mean, that's a really good job of seeing a tendency in-game, putting something in, and having the faith and the trust in your backup quarterback to say, we didn't rep this. Excuse me, we didn't rep this at all this week, but we know you can do this. We know what they're going to do defensively. So if you see this, can this. That's a lot of trust and faith in their backup quarterback, who still has not really been with the team that long, in great execution to pull that off. It's a really nice play call, really nice recognition from the offensive coaching staff, as well as Willis seeing that on the field, and great execution on that as well. Just a beautiful play, man. Anytime they run leak, I'm going to be very excited about it.
And this was one to be extremely excited about, because it literally set up that Packers victory. And I agree with you. Unbelievable throw. And just the ability for the coaching staff to put that in mid-game with a backup quarterback, with a can call for the backup quarterback to recognize it, to can it, and then to make the perfect pass. Like, that's just big-time coaching stuff. And it's the reason why you pick up wins like this, where maybe, like you said, it was an ugly victory, but you take the victory. And this is a huge reason why you get it in the first place. I want to talk about Evan Williams on the defensive side of the field, as we're joined here by Dusty Evely of the Packaday Podcast and Acme Packing Company. It felt like that when Evan Williams went out of this game, the game changed a little bit. I think part of that is happenstance. I don't think all of a sudden Evan Williams leaves and just like, oh, now we can do anything that we want offensively. I don't think it's quite that much, but it did feel like his absence affected the game. Maybe if not even from his play on the field, just the domino effect of, all right, now Bullard's at safety when he's been practicing in the nickel, and you know now have Eric Stokes more on the field in the boundary. Keyshawn Nixon kicks back inside. So your thoughts on the loss of Evan Williams and how maybe it affected this game a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think it shows up. I mean, you can see it very obviously with some of the Bullard stuff, because they did have, like you said, they want to play him in the nickel. I think it's where he's best. I think that kind of hybrid nickel and safety, because he played safety in college as well, that you can play around with that a little bit. He's just clearly not there yet. Evan Williams, when they have him in there, you know, they got him deep safety, they got him box safety, and so he's kind of covering or fitting the run from depth, or he's just in the box, and they're just trying to do that same thing with Bullard. And Bullard just, there's not a comfort there. I mean, he doesn't have the same body as Williams, so in the box, he's not quite that same presence. And then we saw him trying to fit the run from depth or even cover from depth, and he was just getting turned around. I don't know that he's got a feel for the position right now like Williams does with that safety. I think he'll get there. I really like Bullard, but I mean, that was the biggest thing to me. Like you said, Stokes got burned a couple times. He got beat a couple times, and he's probably not in that position if Williams is out there. So, I mean, Williams is such a smart player that I think having him not out there, you lose something just from his intelligence, the way he's reading stuff. But, yeah, certainly his comfort of the position. I think he's just a better safety, both in the box and deep right now, than Bullard is. And that, I mean, that came up. And I was like, how big of a deal could this be? And then right. They hit like three or four big plays on Bullard. He misses a tackle. And I don't know if Williams stops all of that, but I do think it's less nail-biting down the stretch if Williams is in the whole game.
Which is an incredible thing to say, and I totally believe it's true that this rookie fourth-round pick, his absence was massively felt in the second half of this game, and that's just how well he has been playing. I think Javon Bullard, too, like, I think if he gets a week of practice at safety going into the game, it probably feels a little bit different. I'm sure he's been practicing primarily in the slot because that's where he's been playing, so I think that was probably a degree of different, and, you know, again, just a rough game from Bullard, and he'll learn from that. He's still a rookie. Those are the rookie mistakes that you expect to happen from time to time, but you have to live with it to some extent. He'll bounce back, but that was a tough one. And then, yeah, Stokes still struggling on the outside a little bit. Before we move forward, I just want to ask you, as we stick on the defense here, one of the big questions I think this week, again, is going to be the pressure or lack thereof up front. Now, there were a couple plays where Gary gets there a half second late on a would-be sack, and Lawrence just gets rid of the ball. There's a play early where Preston Smith gets there just a half second late, and Lawrence just barely gets rid of the ball. But your thoughts on the pressure and just, again, the lack of sacks in this game?
Yeah, it was weird. Halfley had done really leaning into really hard over the previous 3 weeks, kind of that sim pressure stuff where they've got the two guys over the center, kind of that mug in the A-gap, A lot of stuff you see from Flores, if you're just looking at the base level, which is like six or seven guys at the line, you're dropping some guys, you're not dropping all of them. It's just kind of, you know, weird. You're dropping linebackers off the line and to drop back into zone. The offense doesn't know where pressure is coming from. They were very, very effective with that. They barely did it in this game. I don't know if that was I kept saying, I don't know if the sim pressure stuff from previous weeks was game plan or if that's how Halfley wanted to operate. This almost felt like Halfley either thought he could win with four or wanted to see if he could against his Jags line, because it was, especially at the beginning, it was a little more traditional four-man front. You know, you had some stuff. You had, I don't know, I think you've probably seen the Rashawn Gary kind of crossover yep. over the center there, which is just kind of silly. He doesn't get home, which those things are fun when he gets home, but yep. when I don't get home, it's a little silly. But they were mixing up a little bit and moving Gary around a little more as the game went on. But it seemed like they wanted to get home traditionally. It just didn't work. So I'm curious going on from here next week against the Lions if this is a – all right, listen, we tried in the first two games to get home with four. It didn't work. We switched some stuff up defensively. We went back to it. It also didn't work. And so we got to get creative again. I mean, just they can't – with where this front four is now, they can't generate with four unless the offensive line is really, really bad. So I think they're going to have to – live in more of that sim pressure world as it goes on, or I think they're just going to struggle with pressure. They don't have the dudes up front to win in the way they want to win right now.
Yeah, which is frustrating because it was expected to kind of be a strength of the team, and so far it has not been. And yeah, to your point on the Rashawn Gary play, if you're going to do the crossover dribble and you're going to go line up against the center and be super you can't just get pushed immediately to the side and get taken out of the play immediately yeah. after it. That's always fun. All right, before we get you out of here, and again, we're joined right now by Dusty Evely of the Packaday Podcast and, of course, of Acme Packing Company as well. Make sure to check out his article breaking down all of his film that he's going on right now over again on acmepackingcompany.com. A quick look ahead to Packers Lions. Obviously, the Jordan Love injury is going to be key here, but other things that you're looking for as we get set for this game later this week?
Yeah, I mean they got to be sound in defense. The offense, I mean, the Lions' offense, despite the inflated point total against a bad Titans team, offense was not the best this past week against the Lions, especially passing offense. But that running offense is rough. I mean, they're missing some pieces on offense. The Packers got to be. This is one I did not see. I assume you did. What's going on with Williams? I don't know if there's a chance he's back this next week. I think they need Williams. They need to be. I mean, more than anything else, they got to be sound up front. Ben Johnson's gonna get his. When they get down the red zone, he gets really creative. They're going to get a couple plays on him just because that's the nature of the beast here, man. But they've got to be sound against the run. A lot of stuff for the Lions start against the run. They want to establish that. They want to keep Jared Goff clean with all the play action stuff. And if you can kind of take the run away from him, that makes it very, very hard for them to operate. Oh, Goff has had an incredible year. But that's when he's kept clean. He was rattled this past week. He got sacked a few times early, kind of rattled them a bit, and they kind of went away from some of that because they didn't really need to do much with it. So more than anything else, they got to be sound against the run, take away the run, or at least tamper a little bit. If they hit a couple explosives, whatever. But it just can't be six-yard gains every single time. And I think if they slow down the run, I think they'll have a pretty good chance here on defense. It's just that offense is just, even when they don't look good, they are doing some very nice things right now. So it's a tough team, dude.
Yeah, it's the defensive performance in this one against Ben Johnson. Somebody's got to figure him out eventually, Dusty. It might as well be Jeff Halfley and maybe a little hat tip to Robert Saleh if he can get some advice as well there. It's got to happen eventually. You can find Dusty's article right now on acmepackingcompany.com, Packers Film Room, The Leak and the Setup. You're going to want to check that out. Dusty, I can't let you go without asking you about Halloween, though. First of all, I have to say, Dusty wrote a Halloween book for kids, Goodnight Monsters. We have it. The kids absolutely love it. Make sure to go get that. You can find it on Amazon.com right now. It is by far and away worth your time. Again, Goodnight Monsters. But Dusty, before we go, your favorite Halloween candy and your must watch Halloween movie every single year?
Oh man, I'll be basic here. I'll say I'll do Reese's Peanut Butter Cups for Halloween candy. I steal those from the children quite often. And then Halloween movie, man, I'll give you two. I'll go with a classic and then a newer classic. I'll do the original Halloween, Carpenter's Halloween from 78. Okay. I mean, that's an absolute classic. I watch that every single year. And then for a modern classic, I'm going to go Mike Doherty's Trick or Treat, that anthology film that came out, I was going to say a few years ago. It's probably been 15 years at this point. But the atmosphere of that one, I just absolutely love. So those are two go-to along with a thousand others. But those are must-watch every year.
Well, speaking of things I absolutely love, Dusty, I love all of your work, and I can't thank you enough for coming on. Where can we find all of your fantastic work that you're putting out everywhere, all times? It's all amazing.
Yeah, find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, at Dusty Evely. I'm writing over Acme Packing Company this year, which has been awesome. And, of course, doing the Wednesday packaging.
Awesome. I love it so much, Dusty. I can't thank you enough. Again, follow him on Twitter and Blue Sky at Dusty Evely. When we come back, we'll be going to the phone. So get those phone calls into the Nicolet Law fan line at 414-677-1250. It's the Packaday Radio Show live from the 1250 AM and 105.7 FM, the Fan Studios, powered by the Potawatomi Sportsbook.